You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come from you, get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself. Yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything was well with you today. This is the weekend, so I hope you get a chance to do all the things you must do, can do, will do, and want to do. And hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not accommodating for you to do it, and it has to be done, and it must be done, and you have to do it, you will get it done. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we appreciate you. And of course, you'll do it safely. You'll be masked up, distanced, hands clean. You know it. The whole nine. You'll be safe. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network. On timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, this program once again is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. So on Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m. in the evening, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Shahad Ahmed. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Moya Kamban and Nataki Kamban. Followed by from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. From 7 to 9 on Thursdays, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday, and it is, today's Friday, oh, then at 8 p.m. this evening, it's time for an awakening, y'all. That's right, Time for an Awakening. That's right, on Fridays. Saturday, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then also from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. The Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday, once again, it's Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black, the largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. And remember, they are in the process of trying to build a supermarket here in the Atlanta area, of which we don't have one. And so when you go online, you know, and look at all the products that are produced by us and where they are, and make a donation. All right. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bamani Taihemba has been taking our people to the motherland and doing an outstanding job for 400 over the many years. He has trips upcoming April 2nd through the 12th.
Senegal and Gambia. May 24th to June 4th to Ghana. November 18th to November 29th, Tanzania. All of these trips are around $3,700. Everything you need to know and paperwork and everything is right on the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Give Brother Mamani a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Baba Rinoco, his trips have been postponed temporarily. And so he's doing webinars and Zooms. He's got one tonight. He's got one tonight. Tomorrow night, Saturday, the 6th. And it's an Eventbrite. Go to Appeal, APPEL.org/events to register. And that is Great African Historians. And then next week, Friday, the 12th, a conversation with Dr. Bayina Bello of Haiti. And go to Eventbrite and put in Rinoco for that particular program. My dear sister, Bayina Bello of Haiti. I'm quite sure she'll be talking about her book, The Sheroes of the Haitian Revolution. The Sheroes of the Haitian Revolution. And there were many. Habesha Works Incorporated, HabeshaIncorporated.org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Habesha, they are doing the work. These brothers and sisters are doing the work. I can't say enough about what the Habesha does here in the Atlanta area with the Habesha Works, Sustainable Seeds, Sustainable Agriculture, and so forth. It is outstanding what Habesha does. And, of course, they have the Kashi Project in Ghana. They have the Kashi Project. And so they deserve to be supported. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. The Ledge, Land for Environmental Development of Group Economics. The Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. And they deal with the four things that are most important for human life. And that is food, water, clothing, and shelter. And they have 12 programs going on the continent. You know, in six countries, employing over 170 people, and have over 260 members. They need more members. They need more people to help become members of the Ledge Group. Go to theledgegroup.com and see for yourself. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, on Ralph David Abernathy, across the street from Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar. The number to call is 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. They got all delicious smoothies and drinks and pastries, all kinds of good stuff. Wadadas. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia has moved. I believe she's about ready to open if she hasn't opened already. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. That's the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. If you're in the Atlanta area, check her out. If there's a book that you need and you don't have a bookstore in your area, give her a call. I'm quite sure she might be able to work something out in terms of getting the book and getting it to you. The other bookstore is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, my good friend, Brother Kazimde Ajamu. And he has a coffee bar now in his bookstore selling delicious Cameroon Boyo. Brother Kazimde Ajamu. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Same applies if There's a book you're looking for, I'm quite sure. If he doesn't have it, he'll get it for you. Gabriel Arroyo doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. The Sanjay-Haiti organization. Please check her out. Go to Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti.org. Sanjay-Haiti. And look at the great work she's doing with the young people, the children, the education, the health component, the sustainable agriculture, the entrepreneurship. Outstanding. Akhavan Institute. No, let me go here. Let me go to Us Lifting Us in their Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio last night. A good conversation in terms of men and women, and, you know, standing on relationship. Good conversation. blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us Lifting Us every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Our program from 9 to 10. If you want to call to listen, just to listen, you can do that. And or give questions, comments, or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics. As we like to say, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us. Akhavan Institute, brothers and sisters, the work is constantly being done by Mama and Baba Baruti, and they need support. Go to Cash App or PayPal, and you can make your donations that way. Or you can send a money order check to Akhavan Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akhavan Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. On Cash App, $YAA, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And, of course, they're having today, just starting off today, I'm going to go to Baruti. But today, from 1 to 4, it is the Science Fair hosted by the Metro Atlanta American African Independent School System. The Science Fair is outstanding. I love what these young people do, the displays they have. They articulate these issues. They're great. Brothers and sisters, you can be a part of it. Go to Zoom. Put in the code 807-211-2759. That's 807-211-2759. The passcode is PEARL, P-E-A-R-L, P-E-A-R-L. The password is PEARL. And there's an information phone number here at 404-344-2777. That's 404-344-2777. And that is today. That is this afternoon. And so once I get off this program, I'm going on my computer right there. That's right. Right there to the, it's been great going to the fair on Friday. I usually have it at the Westin Mall, and then on Saturday at the Greenbrier Mall. And the students are so well prepared. And like I said, their displays are, some of them are so elaborate. They're really great. They're very creative. And the information is factual. They're talking about science. They're talking about health. They're talking about a number of things that we must relate to. No, we can relate to, but we must understand and adhere to. Baba Baruti's program is tomorrow, Saturday, February 6th, from 12 noon to 3 p.m. And it is developing effective rites of passage. Developing effective rites of passage programming. And it is $20 for brothers, from gentlemen, and $10 for warriors in training. It's a longer program. It's the men's quarterly meeting, the men's gathering. So on PayPal, you can, if you go to PayPal, put in Yah Baruti, Y-A-A-B-A-R-U-T-I, at Yahoo, Yah Baruti, at yahoo.com. On Cash App, put in the $ Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And, of course, put in the men's gathering, your name, and the email address that where you want the link to be sent to. That's tomorrow from noon until 3 p.m. And then Mama Yah, her program is 4 o'clock tomorrow, When a Woman Heals. When a Woman Heals, from 4 to 6, $10 donation. And that includes sister, put information, sister, quarterly sister circle, your name, your email address, where you want it sent to, and it's $10 donation, $5 for the teens. Okay? And, of course, the Inye Sasim Volume 2 is available. Go to Akabin House for an array of Baba Baruti's books, who's pretty prolific. Go to AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com, and pick up the Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. That's a good segue. It's a good segue to the Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. February 4th. A scholar whose lifestyle is inconsistent with the implication of his work and the collective achievement of our people cannot be taken seriously. Ashe. Words without ancestral vision cannot find their way to the front line. They may be in the general vicinity, but they are neither actively engaging the enemy nor in constructive pursuit of sovereignty. Warriorhood is an action verb. However, it is only verbal within the process of bringing clarity, righteous direction, and life to the warrior's action. At the same time, study is necessary. Our workers must be careful in their study of history, though, because any intellectual efforts done without political direction and intent can limit or nullify its effects. Without a sovereignty-seeking vision, many of the students who gain this knowledge can become circumscribed by a record whose possibility for Africans is solely based on the pride of what has already been done. The vision becomes even more damaged if what we have accomplished in the past is articulated as a human thing, and that the ensuing direction others have taken us from there is an inevitable evolutionary evaluation. When progress, even if socially deleterious and slightly misguided spiritually, is automatically defined as good, we lose our ability to subjectively and objectively be Africans. The misguided idea of an inclusive humanity, of which Africans serve as the accidental womb, makes it reasonable, even imperative, to find ways to join ranks with those who seek to destroy us as they celebrate their fabricated humanity and a plastic civilization in the name of progress. Affirm, my lifestyle is perfectly aligned with my stated vision, and that is consistent with the positive, productive movement of our people toward African sovereignty. Affirm, my lifestyle is perfectly aligned with my stated vision, and that is consistent with the positive, productive movement of our people toward African sovereignty. That has to be and must be the ultimate goal. That is the end game. If African sovereignty is not the end game, what the hell are we talking about? What the hell are we doing? We have marched, we have paraded, we have sit in, we have demonstrated, we have prayed, we have hoped. We have done so many things to try to get this cracker, this European, this Urugu, to a no avail. It hasn't happened. It's not happening, and it ain't gonna happen. So the bottom line for us is that we do for ourselves. We become independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. February 5th, without a community, you cannot be yourself. The community is where we draw the strength needed to affect change inside of us. Community is formed each time more than one person or family meet for a purpose. Developing a community depends upon what the people involved consent. An African community is a place of self-definition. Any group of people meeting and living together with an intent of connecting to the power within is a community. Most Africans living in America do not live in communities. Most Africans in America do not live in communities. Instead, we live not in neighborhoods. We live in hoods. Because we ain't too damn neighborly, are we? We live in hoods where we are disconnected from each other and there is no communal bond. Infudishi. Let us build families so strong that the reverberations of the selfless love, uncompromised truth, and unbroken proven trust within them is self-evident to all, for all who can see. Let us build families whose collective work toward our sovereignty is calculated, determined, undaunted, and felt everywhere African people reside. Let us build families which fully, consciously possess a dynamic, visionary, ancestral spirit. Let us build families created solely to set new, old standards of beauty, decency, respect, remembrance, and power for eternity. Let us build African families. Affirm, I live in a community of like minds. Affirm, I live in a community of like minds. I'm thankful for the Atlanta community here who has embraced me when I moved here 6 years ago. It'll be 7 years in the fall that I've been here. And I've enjoyed my time in the conscious community here in Atlanta like I have in Milwaukee. And anywhere else that I go, I strive to seek them out. Where are they? Where are the brothers and sisters at? February 6th, perhaps to be sane in this society is the best evidence of insanity. Addison Gale. Warriors need not get caught up in the current events because, as our warrior ancestor, Dr. Nana Clark, taught us, history is a current event. And therefore, if we are to understand what is happening and what will happen, we must understand historical behavior, historical patterns which so easily reveal the spirit of Yorugu's innate ugliness, regardless of their visible role in the immediate chaos and or confusion which any particular current event brings. This is not to say that warriors should not be aware when you historically know Yorugu and their genocide allies within and outside of the culture. Awareness can be critical to employing corrective actions. Warriors should just not get caught up and the latest issues to the point of becoming so distracted from their African minds that they cannot see what is coming. I'm considered entirely insane within Yorugu's reality. I am considered entirely insane within Yorugu's reality. Their reality. That's why I have that definition of power. I think is so powerful, Dr. Wade Nobles. The definition of power, the ability to define reality. Then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. That's what happened. Europeans define reality, and we have accepted their definition as if it's our own. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in their reality? Who are we in their reality? Okay, let me read. I haven't read this one in a while. You know, I was a pleasure reading Lester Velt Middleton's piece on Now Go and Build for Eternity. Because finding out more about Lester Velt Middleton last Friday at the ASCAC was just tremendous. That the brother built his own house. He was just a dynamic brother. Passed away too soon. He was 44 years old. And just as he was completing the house that he had built. Yeah. Kwame Nkrumah understood that it was not just Ghana that needed to be free, but all of Africa. And then Africa must unite. It wasn't just about Ghana or Nigeria or Cameroon or Botswana or wherever. It was about Africa uniting. And that's what the Pan-African Federalist Movement is about. Africa uniting under one African states. He understood that so well that he said in the Speech of Freedom in 1961, remember it was 57 when the freedom, but in 1961 he said, "I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear or envy or suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind." A few years later, he said, "If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore." Oh, how prophetic and how true. Sad. How pathetic and how true. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect that the European has had on our ability to think victoriously, on our ability to think, to conceive such a vision, the victory of our righteous struggle. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so as to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans. This is demanded by an African-centered view because why? We are Africans. This is a demand because we are Africans. And because the future to which European leads us is genocide. Marimba Ani. Yeah. Today, of course, the 5th of February, 5 days in of our month, our story month, our history. It's important that we do read, recite, collect, share information this month about who we are. Things that would help at least put something on the mind of our people as we begin to do the necessary work of our liberation, our self-determination, our sovereignty. If this information is not imparted, it'd be very difficult for us to understand it and for us to see or conceive the idea. Because of what we can't conceive, we can't achieve. We can't even, there's some of us, I think back at my favorite documentary, Wattstack. If you haven't checked it out, you can go to YouTube, you know, and you can, and I think you can watch the whole movie, you know. But there's a part in that movie with a brother, because, you know, they talked to many of the people at that time. It was 1972. It was 7 years after the riots in 65. So in 1972, they Stack Records out of Memphis and the array of artists that Stack had, you know, Isaac Hayes, Luther Ingram, Carla Thomas, Rufus Thomas, Do the Funky Chicken, y'all, you know, and Isaac Hayes, of course. And they came to L.A. to put on this concert to raise money. And they talked with the people. They filmed that. Al Bell and them cast did an outstanding job. This is a great documentary done by us, for us. And there's a part where they're talking to one brother. He's saying, you know, "I've been down so long that getting up don't even cross my mind." And that's some of us. We've been beaten for so long without understanding there is a way. And that way is to embrace the knowledge of self, to learn our history and understand our culture. I ain't talking about the culture of drunkenness and foolery and ignorance and dependency. I'm talking about the culture of achievement. When people from far and wide came to sit at the feet of African people. I know that's hard for many people to even fathom, even people to believe that at one time the leading people in the world was us. Because number one, we were the first people to begin with anyway. But Carter G. Woodson understood this. When Carter G. Woodson was working in those coal mines in West Virginia to help support his family, he never married. He never had children to help support his siblings and so forth. When he heard about a school in Hampton, he was already 22 years old. But he went to that school, finished in a few years, got his degree. It says in Islam, in the Hadith is the sayings of Prophet Muhammad. It says, he who puts their foot on the path of seeking knowledge. I don't say he, I say they. Because it's African people, we always had a complementarity. So they, men and women, who put their foot on the path to seeking knowledge, they go in the way of God until they return. I repeat, they who put their foot on the path to seeking knowledge, they go in the way of God until they return. It means you never return, because once you put your foot on that path to seeking knowledge, God guides you, God motivates you, God inspires you. It takes you where you need to go. It shows you what you need to read and what you need to do. And that's what Carter G. Woodson did. He put his foot on that path to seeking knowledge. And it took Carter G. Woodson all the way to Harvard University. He was the second American African to get a doctorate degree from Harvard University. The first one was W.E.B. Du Bois, William Edward Burghardt Du Bois, and then Carter G. Woodson. But what Carter G. Woodson did not see in all those years of learning in higher institutions, particularly of European higher institutions, the history and accomplishments and achievements of African people, he did not see. And he dedicated and committed his life. Here this man with a doctorate degree from Harvard. And I'm not saying this demeaningly, of course not, you know that. But all he ever was a high school principal. I shouldn't say it like that, but the bottom line is that that's the kind of sacrifice that he made. And it was tremendous. He never married. Now, I'm quite sure there was women after him. He was a handsome young brother. But you know what? Correct me if I'm wrong. If you've seen a picture, I probably done seen at least about 7 pictures of Carter G. Woodson. I've never seen him smile. I've never seen Carter G. Woodson smile. And I wondered, damn, did the cat have a wax smile? He had bad teeth or something? But then, of course, I realized, no. Because he understood what happened to us as a people. Ain't nothing to smile about. Denying a people their accomplishment, their history, and their reality is nothing to smile about. And so he went on the search to reclaim, recapture, and restore the history of our people. There are so many people who are in our history. In fact, all of them, we all owe them a great debt of gratitude, because many of them have sacrificed much. And many of them, you know, did it without foundation money, grant money, or anything. They did it for the love of our people. They understood the liberating effect of knowledge of self, instilling in you a pride, a dignity, an awareness that you stand firm on who you are. That's why, to me, I'm seriously advocating early education for our people, for our children, at the very beginning, because once that's instilled, as opposed to going to these public schools, private schools, charter schools, all this, if it's not African-centered, if it's not stealing in that child who they are historically, who they are culturally, if it is not instilling in that child those concepts and those precepts, then it's no good. I don't give a damn how well you read. I don't care if you know math concepts. Because it's not for us collectively. Yes, you can have a child who's so bright. I mean, you know, and I know there's many children that have met genius status, so to speak, based upon the ideas of the Caucasian, of the European, of the Urugu. Their IQ test. And then sometimes people are all amazed. You should not be amazed. It is who we are. But now we must learn for us, for Africans, for African people. Got a little piece here. Going to play before the first break. Carter G. Woodson. Like I said, you know, there's a couple of people in our history, and many of them are, honestly. But Carter G. Woodson is special. You know Dr. Clark is special. You know, that to me, Francis Quesrell Welsing is special. These are the people that I have a lot of admiration for. I've read them. I read their history, their biographies. I read their works, you know, and I believe in them. Here's a little piece on Carter G. Woodson. On the Shoulders of Giants.
Carter G. Woodson. December 19th, 1875, James Henry and Anna Eliza Woodson gave birth to one of the greatest minds of the 20th century, Carter G. Woodson, in New Canton, Virginia. As a child, Woodson's family was poor and sharecropping was a means his family used to support themselves. As Woodson grew older, he would work as a day laborer in Virginia before his family moved to Fayette County, West Virginia, in search of better opportunities. Woodson would begin working as a coal miner, and his father would find work doing railroad construction. Because of his family's financial situation, Woodson was not attending school regularly. However, he began learning on his own and mastering subjects the school taught. As a 20-year-old, he began attending Frederick Douglass High School. 2 years later, he graduated high school and moved to Kentucky to enroll in Brea College. Brea College was established in the 1850s by abolitionists who wanted ex-slaves to receive an education. Woodson earned his bachelor's degree from Brea College in 1903. Later that same year, he became a school supervisor in the Philippines, a position he would hold until 1907. The fall of 1907, Woodson would become a full-time student at the University of Chicago, where he would earn his master's and bachelor's in European history. In 1909, Woodson would earn a scholarship to attend Harvard University and eventually earn a PhD in history, making him the second African-American to earn a PhD behind W.E.B. Du Bois. After leaving Harvard, Woodson would move to Washington, D.C. and become a teacher at both Armstrong and Dunbar M. Street High Schools from 1909 to 1919. From 1919 to 1920, he worked as a professor of history, dean of arts and sciences, and head of the graduate program in history at Howard University. He furthered his career as a professor at the West Virginia Collegiate Institute from 1920 to 1922. Finally, later in 1922, he would become the director of the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History and his return to Washington, D.C. 1915 was the year that Woodson founded the Association for the Study of Afro-American Life and History because he noticed the need to bring African history to the forefront. It was no secret that the history of African people was purposely hidden and overlooked. This was unacceptable to Woodson. He would next create his own publication called the Journal of Negro History in 1916. And in 1921, he established the African American owned Associated Publishers Press. The February of 1926 was the year Woodson would create Negro History Week to educate African American people about the richness of the history of African people. Woodson would work extensively lobbying to make Negro History Week be recognized federally by the United States. It was important to Woodson that African history was available for every African American to access. With that thought in mind, the Negro History Bulletin was published in 1937 to help Woodson reach his goal. The Journal of Negro History was used by Woodson to provide a realistic depiction of black life in America. It portrayed blacks as human beings from many different walks of life. Because of the publication, black people were able to learn that we were more than slaves and sharecroppers. Woodson would also choose the second week of February to celebrate Negro History Week because of the birthdays of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. He also provided many different black institutions with information and instruction on what Negro History Week was and why it had a need to be celebrated. Woodson, along with Rayford W. Logan, Charles W. Wellesley, Lorenzo J. Green, and A.A. Taylor, would become true champions of the history of African people. They used the information they gathered through research to write about and teach the alternative history of African people. This story was different from what African American people were used to being taught. Woodson and his colleagues were able to provide the people with stories directly from African-American people and other African people from around the world. In 1926, the NAACP honored Woodson with the Spingarn Medal for his efforts in the promotion and education of African history. Woodson's association, which was the main vehicle for educating black America about its past, was initially funded by white corporations. Woodson refused to affiliate his organization with HBCUs, so he lost his funding. From that point on, he was supported by the black community. Woodson became a published author with his work, The Education of the Negro, prior to 1861. He also published 4 monographs, 5 textbooks, 5 collections of source materials, 13 articles, and 5 collaborative sociological studies. He was dedicated to educating black people about who they were and also promoted people researching for themselves. Woodson is noted as one of the first scholars to study slavery from the experience of the slaves. He was also able to capture the true horrors and terror African people faced on a daily basis. He was noted for publishing such works as The Negro Wage Earner, The Negro Professional Man and the Community, A Century of Negro Migration, A History of the Negro Church, The Negro in Our History, The Miseducation of the Negro, and The African Background Outline. Woodson died in 1950 in Washington, D.C., being regarded as the father of black history because of his contributions to the history of African people, as well as being the champion behind Negro History Week, which eventually became Black History Month. If it were not for people like Carter G. Woodson and J.A. Rogers, it would be even more difficult now for us to know our story. Mr. Carter G. Woodson, we proudly stand on your shoulders. For more information, please visit www.ontheshoulders1.com.
That's right, brothers and sisters, we truly do stand on the shoulders of giants. We truly do. Those who came before us, and we owe them a great debt of gratitude. And the payment is for us to continue the struggle, continue their legacy, continue that march to independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. They laid it out. They did a damn good job. They laid it out. When we come back from the break, I'm going to go over some quotes by Dr. Carter G. Woodson, some of my favorite quotes by Woodson. And, you know, he was just an extraordinary individual, very committed. Like I said, he never married. His work was to bring this to the attention of us as African people, this information of this history, this knowledge. And he was committed. He was committed. I remember one story that he tells that I read. He would have lunch. He was staying at the YMCA, I think it was in Chicago, and his sister would always be there. And And, you know, and he told me, trying to get me married, you know, but I'm married to my work, you know. I'm committed to this work. Yeah. What a beautiful man. Appreciate him for all he has done. So, once again, don't forget the science fair after this program at 1 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, the science fair is from 1 to 4 on Zoom. And check it out, at least for a little bit, man. See the great work that these students put into their presentations, into their displays. Go to Zoom, put in the ID, 807-211-2759. 807-211-2759. And the passcode is PEARL, P-E-A-R-L. Passcode is PEARL. So that should be very nice this afternoon. Like I said, I've always enjoyed it. And going to West End Mall on Friday and the Greenbrier Mall on Saturday and talk with the young people and see their displays as they articulate the information. Yeah. Beautiful. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to continue on with more information by Dr. Carter G. Woodson and the importance of this month, the importance of our story, of telling our story. It's vitally important that we embrace our story. And our story is not myth. It's not fairy tales. It's not allegory. Our story is based on fact. Many of the things that we have done have been appropriated by the European. I remember in my early times, for me, in ASCAC, and looking at some of the debates with Dr. Clark and Mary Lefkowitz, Baba Jetty, Dr. Carruthers, Baba Jetty, and debate with Art Schlesinger, all these other right-wing Caucasians, they would just dust these folks. You know, and that's the funny part, is that all the information is there. All of it has been done, but yet we don't embrace it. It's all there. Everything that we need to liberate our minds is there. The problem is we're afraid to embrace it. Just like that one time that sister said, I don't want you talking to me. You're trying to put something on me. You're trying to change my mind. And I'm trying to get you to think. I would hope that if you start thinking, your mind automatically will be changed. The concepts and ideas of, oh, will no longer be there. And you will think in a way that you are feel good about yourself. You feel good about us. You don't blame us any longer for all the craziness that you see that goes on here in America and even on the continent. And even in the diaspora, you don't think about the people who have just hate themselves so badly that they bleach their skin, hate themselves so badly that they don't deal with sisters. They only deal with women outside of our culture. That's why this is so important. That's why this month is important. Now, to me, the most important day of celebration and acknowledgement is African Liberation Day in May 25th. We need to pump that day up. That must be the most important celebration or a commemoration or time that we come together to deal with African liberation, because that is our salvation. It ain't Christmas. It ain't, damn it, Thanksgiving. It ain't none of that. African Liberation Day. And then, of course, this month. Anything that we do that speaks to us historically and culturally, we must embrace. If it's somebody or something outside ourselves, you want to deal with it, that's up to you. But I ain't dealing with nothing that's outside ourselves. I'm giving nothing. No time, no energy, especially no money. But for us, whatever sacrifice needs to be made. Because I believe in African sovereignty. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Brothers and sisters, we'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Stand in your way. I want y'all to live.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Once we infuse ourselves with the knowledge of self, there's no stopping us. There will be no stopping us. Once we truly believe in ourselves and believe in one another and our cause, there is no stopping us. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, this program. And then Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Center with Dr. Mawia Kambon and Nataki Kambon. And then that's followed at 9, from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 p.m., Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. And then on Fridays at 8 p.m. from 8 to 10, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And looking at a lot of the history of Carter G. Woodson and the great things that he did, the contributions that he made, the sacrifices, the tremendous sacrifices that he made. You know, he was no nonsense. He was no nonsense. He was committed. He didn't just sway with the wind. No, he was committed. You know, and we owe him. Once again, we owe him. As far as colleagues were concerned, he's willing to work with anybody. He believed in self-reliance and respect, values he shared with Marcus Garvey. In fact, he worked with Marcus Garvey, the Negro World newspaper. He wrote articles in that. Woodson's political activism placed him in the center of a circle of many American African and African intellectuals and activists from the 20s to the 40s. He corresponded with Du Bois, John Brooks, Arturo Alfonso Schomburg, Arthur Schomburg, Hubert Harrison, the History Club, Harlem History Club, and Thomas Fortein, among many others. Even with the extended duties of association, Woodson was able to write academic works such as The History of the Negro Church in 1922, The Miseducation of the Negro in 1933, and many other to have readership, a wide readership. Woodson did not shy away from controversial subjects and used the pages of the Black World to contribute to debates. One issue related to the West Indian and American-African relationships, he summarized that the West Indian is free and observed that West Indian societies have been more successful and properly dedicated. And this is true. There's been some dynamic people coming out of the West Indies, which, of course, is the Caribbean and Trinidad, Barbados, Jamaica, you name it. And resources needed to educate and emancipate people generally. Woodson approved of efforts by the West Indians to include materials related to our history and culture into their school curriculums, which, of course, even today is not done properly. Woodson was ostracized by some of his contemporaries because of his insistence on defining a category history related to ethnic culture and race. At the same time, these educators felt that it was wrong to teach or understand American-African history as separate from more general American history. According to these educators, Negroes were simply Americans, darker skinned, but with no history apart from that of any other. See? Thus, Woodson's effort to get American-African culture and history into the curriculum of institutions, even historically American-African colleges, was often unsuccessful. They didn't want to hear that stuff. They didn't want to hear that Black stuff. You know? Yeah. He's buried in Suitland, Maryland. He died at the age of 74, April 3rd of 1950. You know? Well, he was a great man. A great man, a visionary. You know, determined to further recognition of us as our culture and our history and our place in the world. You know, in 1933, he wrote The Miseducation of the Negro. In 1926, he established Negro History Week, and he did it in February because of Frederick Douglass. Now, they also mentioned Abraham Lincoln. I don't mention Abraham Lincoln because Lincoln, he said himself, if I can solidify the Union, bring it together without freeing these coloreds, these Negroes, I'd do so. So he had no love for us as a people, you know. So I don't include Abraham Lincoln in nothing, you know. But Carter G. Woodson understood that Frederick Douglass, being born in captivity, did not know his birthday, but his mother said to him, "You are my heart. You are my Valentine." So Frederick Douglass chose February 14th to be his birthday and to honor him and the great work that Frederick Douglass had done. He started Negro History Week in February. And of course, February is a short month because of Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar created the calendar after the Comitic calendar, which, of course, this is not the year 2021. This is the year 6,261. The Comitic calendar, oldest calendar in the world, based on 365 days. We some bad people, y'all. We are. And so Julius Caesar, creating this Julian calendar, saw that the days didn't started to not coincide with the seasons. And so he created the leap year, putting that one day in it to kind of balance it off to make sure that it coincided with the seasons. But he took the days from February because he wanted 31 days in his month of July, Julius Caesar. That's why they're all off from a Latin, just like September is 7th, but it's the 9th month. October is 8th, but it's the 10th month. November is 9, but it's the 11th month. And of course, December is 10, but it's the 12th month because of Julius Caesar. But not just Julius Caesar, because, you know, when he was murdered, when he believed that he could just walk up in the Senate, you know, because he was all bad, "I'm Caesar." When the soothsayer, the prognosticator, the psychic told him, "Hey man, don't go up into the Senate because they're not feeling you, dude." He says, "Ha, I am Caesar. I go where I want. I do what I want." So Cassius and Brutus is laying in the cut. Sousa steps in and they step on him. They start stabbing his ass, you know. And so then from that point, Augustus Caesar takes over. Augustus, Julius Caesar. And Augustus Caesar, you know, name was Octavian, changed his name to Augustus Caesar. He said, well, if Julius can have a month and with 31 days in it, I should have a month with 31 days in it. So August for Augustus Caesar in 31 days. In the whole year, there's only 2 months that both have 31 days. And, of course, they were taken from February. So that's why February is a short month. And they don't give us any damn thing. There's a month they gave us. You can go right now and there will be, you can go to a high school. You can go to a middle school or elementary school. And you can ask them why is this February Black History Month. They won't say a damn thing about Carter G. Woodson. They might say Dr. King was born. You know, I'm serious. Today. But to honor Frederick Douglass, he made Negro History Week in the middle of the month. At least a time for us to focus, put some energy, some direction into looking at and researching and reading our history, knowledge of self, gaining the insight of who we are historically and culturally. He did it. And for that, he should be always honored, because it was so necessary. It is so necessary that we understand and gravitate and embrace the knowledge of ourselves, the history of us as a people. You know. So here are some quotes, some of my favorite quotes. My favorite quotes of Dr. Carter G. Woodson, you know. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Okay. Some quotes by Carter G. Woodson. You know, and I've had this one quote of his, you know, that have always stuck with me. But I'm going to go through some quotes of his and comment on them. In our so-called democracy, we are accustomed to give the majority what they want rather than educate them to understand what is best for them. Because they feel in this society, the Europeans particularly, education is part of a control. It's not part of enlightenment. It's not part of giving you what you need as a human being to be dedicated and committed. It's part of a control. The mere parting of information is not education. You know, it's not. It may be well to repeat here that saying that old men talk of what they have done, young men of what they're doing, and fools about what they expect to do. The Negro race has a rather large share of the last mentioned class. We got a share of our fools. But that is because, and I know there have been people who have accused me, oh, Brother Oshie, you always blaming the white man. You damn right. I put the blame where it squarely belongs. On Europeans, Caucasians, Urugu, of trying to maintain and sustain a system that they created that has denied our humanity, that has relegated us to the lowest rung on human level. You damn right. And they continue to do it. But it is our responsibility for us to get up out of this madness, for us to come together and begin to trust one another, believe in one another, and share with one another. Philosophers have long conceded, however, that every man has two educators, that which is given to him and the other, that which he gives himself. Of the two kinds, the latter is by far more desirable. Indeed, all that is most worthy in man, he must work out and conquer for himself. It is that which constitutes our real and best nourishment. We are merely taught, seldom nourishes the mind like that which we teach ourselves. There's no doubt about it. I didn't do well in school. I didn't do well in school at all, unfortunately. But I began to have a knowledge and seek a knowledge for ourselves. And I've been working on that and will continue to work on that for the rest of my life. We should emphasize that Negro history, but the Negro in history. We must emphasize not the Negro history, but the Negro in history. We need what we need is not a history of select races or nations, but the history of the world, void of national bias, race, hate, and religious prejudice. There should be no indulgence in undue ecology of the Negro. The case of the Negro is well taken care of when it is shown how he has far influenced the development of civilization. But of course, you know, the European was adamant in the 1800s, particularly, well into the 20th century and even the 21st century, of degrading and demeaning and denigrating us. That we had nothing. We come from nothing. We had no culture to speak of. Even though Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop had proven that ancient Kemet was African. But still today, Europeans deny that fact. When you watch National Geographic, Learning Channel, Public Television, PBS, whatever, if they show a dramatization or illustration, the people are going to look Caucasian. But if they show somebody serving somebody, they're going to look like us. Because what they have constantly done is constantly put into our minds that we ain't never been nothing but a servant, and nothing could be furthest from the truth. Ancient Kemet is ours. There was no Exodus. There were no Hebrews being enslaved in Kemet. They didn't build a damn thing. Everything. And none of that was built by captive labor or us being captive or suffering the sting of the lash. The reason why even to this very day, you can still look at the pyramids, even though the limestone covering was taken off of them by Arabs when they came in and took northern Africa. Muslims. Islam, and Islam spread on the scene. Now you see how exposed rock and so forth. They were smooth, polished limestone. So I'm saying to us, this is the situation that we find ourselves in. That's why this month is so important. That's why it's good to have programs, especially with our young people, and teach them. That's why it is vitally important. So this month, particularly, we can focus on. You know, yes, I agree. Our history is 365, 24/7. Yes, there's no doubt about it. It is that way with me, and it has been that way with me for decades now and will continue to be. But the reality is, a lot of times it is not. For me, education means to inspire people to live more abundantly, to learn, to begin life as they find it and make it better. If you teach the Negro that he has accomplished as much good as any other race, he will aspire to equality and justice without regard to race. You know. If you want to join this conversation, please, if you're on, hit star twice. If you're not, call 215-490-9832. We're talking today about our history. And it's anything you want to talk about it, please, please join in. Such an effort would upset the program of the oppressor in Africa and America. Play up before the Negro then his crimes and shortcomings. Let him learn to admire the Hebrews, the Greeks and the Latins and the Teutonics. Lead the Negro to detest the man of Africa and African blood, to hate themselves. That's what this education has done. It made us hate ourselves. We have a wonderful history behind us. If we're unable to demonstrate to the world that you have the record, the world will say to you, you are not worthy to enjoy the blessings of democracy or anything else, because they had led us to believe that we were running around a jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind. I know when I do my presentation, I talk about the what the Europeans like Arnold Toynbee and the Hume, all these Lincoln, Jefferson, all of them had to say. And of course, the most deep one is Henry Berry of the Virginia House of Representatives. He says, we have closed off every avenue by which light may enter the captive's mind. And if we could extinguish the capacity to see the light, they will be as the beasts of the fields and we will be safe. We have closed off every avenue by knowledge and information about themselves. We control all of the books, all the magazines, everything. We close all that off, and everything that they that he picks up and reads about himself will be negative, mean-spirited, and hateful, and they will hate themselves. And if somebody brings them, they'll reject them. They don't want to know. We got you. We got your mind. I'm not afraid of being sued by Caucasian businessmen. In fact, I should welcome such a lawsuit. It would do the cause much good. Let us banish fear. We have been in this mental state for three centuries. I'm a radical. I'm ready to act. If I can't find brave men to help me, if I can find brave, that's, see, Carter G. Woodson was a radical. And he's speaking in reference to the NAACP and, because, like I said, he used to write for the crises and so forth, but then he had ideas, and the NCP was, nah, we might get sued, and this. See, he quit them. And, of course, the NACP was a lot of European Jews involved. In fact, they helped start it, and many of the leadership. In fact, Joel Svengard, was an informant for the federal government in the highest honor. It might be still today. And to me, let me say this. Organizations like the NAACP, the Urban League, and many other Negro organizations, I don't mix words. I'm not afraid to say it. Some of these fraternities and sororities are weak. They are weak because they still embrace the concepts that they have been dictated to and given way back when. And that still guides them. And they look for individuals that'll follow that line. The oppressor has always indoctrinated the weak with his interpretations of the crimes of the strong. as well as said, to handicap the student by teaching him that his black face is a curse and that his struggle to change his condition is hopeless is the worst sort of lynching. Because you would lynch the mind. It's the worst sort of lynching. You have taken all the aspirations and will from a people that they can never overcome their condition that they find themselves in. When you control a man's thinking, you do not have to worry about his actions. History shows that it does not matter who's in power or what revolutionary forces take over the government, those who have not learned to do for themselves and have to depend solely on others never obtain any more rights or privileges in the end than they had in the beginning. They just continue to follow suit. They continue on. This so-called modern education with all its defects, however, does others so much more good than it does the Negro, because it has been worked out in conformity to the needs of those who have enslaved and oppressed weaker people. He was insightful. He was on it. He was dead on. If the white man wants to hold on to it, let him do so. But the Negro, so far as he is able, should develop and carry out a program of his own. I say. If the Caucasian wants to hold on to it, and he does because it benefits him. But the Negro, so far as he is able, should develop and carry out his own program. Should carry his own program. In schools of theology, Negroes are taught the interpretation of the Bible worked out by those who justify segregation and winked at economic debasement of the Negro at times almost to the point of starvation. The theology. I'm sorry, brothers and sisters. I can't see how the European can give us a book and say it's the infallible word of God when what he has done to us, they can't give us a damn thing. I don't want nothing from them. I don't want to argue. I don't want to, get in debates. I want nothing from them. We have a caller, 646-646. Good afternoon.
Hey, Ochi, what's happening, man? What's the good word?
Oh, Jay, it's all right, my dear brother. It's all right. How about you today, man?
Oh, man, it's good. I ain't going to complain. It don't help none, man. You know the cracker got it set up to where complaining ain't going to help. So why do it? You know, yeah. Just give them something to smile about. But, you were talking about Carter G. Woodson, one of the first books that I read. And I think all of our children and all of our people should read that book. But it's amazing how some of the principles that he wrote back then are still as poignant today as it was almost 100 years ago.
Isn't that sad?
That says a lot right there.
It does. It speaks volumes. That's how pathetic and how sad it is.
Yeah, and we don't look at it that we don't look at it that way. That with the lessons that have been given to us, that we haven't evolved into a position of wanting to have sovereignty for ourselves and independence and all of the necessary things to take this cracker off our
mouth. Yeah.
You know what I mean? We don't want to practice the principles that Carter G. Dealt with, that he tried to get us to deal with. And it's just kind of, in a sense, if you think about it, tragic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, to be honest with you, this is just my feeling. I shouldn't have to go 50 years to get information that is attainable and applicable to what's going on today. I'm supposed to be able.
You're breaking up on me, Jay. Jay.
No, I'm saying I'm supposed to be able to move forward from that position and be able to do certain things for myself and my people with just using those things as a template, but to be able to expound on them and make it applicable to how we deal and address with issues today, even though, history is applicable to all things. But the point of the matter is, where is our today so-called Carter G. Woodson, Malcolm, and people of that ilk? I don't want to go back to the lessons of Malcolm. I want new lessons. And I think we haven't, as a people, gotten to that point. It's just like, I don't know if you saw this movie yet, American Skin?
No, I have not. I've heard about it. I have
well,
not.
Don't waste your effing time.
Oh, okay.
Because it's propaganda and disrespect to the African principles of warriorship to no end. Now, here it is. Now, just think about this. Here it is. A cracker kill your child. You kidnap the cracker, and you put the cracker on trial, and in the end, you don't kill the cracker. That don't mean nothing. Because the reality is, you made a stance to number one, kidnap the cracker, knowing that it's going to lead you to two things. It's going to lead to death, or that you go into jail. And to try and make a point, it ain't no point if you don't kill the cracker at the end. That's all propaganda. You know what I mean? And nobody wants to deal and address with that type of propaganda that's put on our people to make us somewhat seem as though we're going to be fair, we're going to be compassionate, and we're going to be nice to this devil that took our kid. Now, imagine at the end of the movie if he killed the cracker. Then what would the narrative be? Things would really change if you showed
it's justice.
That, if you showed that narrative.
Yeah, it's
you
justice.
Can't show that narrative. So why would you put that type of propaganda out to make our people more passive? Think about it.
Yeah, no, I understand
it.
The only
political statement that you could make at the end of that movie is killing that cracker.
But see, the thing is, Jay, as you know, right? As you know, we are the ones who show compassion. We're the ones who show, in light of all the horrors that we've gone through, they make it like that. You know that we're the ones in trying to moralize these Caucasians, trying to get them to understand our humanity and feel bad about what they have done to have them. No, they don't give a damn. They've done what they've done because
just like, it's the worst propaganda in the world to do to a people. It's just like, you know, this new movie I heard coming out about Fred Hampton and what's going on. They want to try and make it seem it has some sort of redeeming factor or some sort of blame or something about the guy who snitched on him, who set him up. And I'm going to see the movie, but I just don't like the way they play and toy with history and then try to play with our emotions and try to change our thought process until, and let's be very clear, until one of us decide that we're going to kill a cracker in his family for murdering one of our own, then it's just going to always be business as usual. Until you get to that point and until somebody makes that type of supreme sacrifice, listen to me clearly. It's a supreme sacrifice because only two things are going to happen. Death, or you're going to spend the rest of your life in jail.
Right.
But the thing is, there's going to come a point in the time when somebody's going to make that supreme sacrifice because you just can't keep on having these crackers kill us and just walk away and the state pay a fine, which is basically, you know, making people rich. Like Perm Daddy and Mumbling Mouth Crump and the rest of them ambulance chases. And in the process, the community goes through the type of violence that we go through. Mm-hmm. I mean, just think about what happened at the Crackers house 2 weeks ago and what happens during the rally with Black Lives Matter, even though I don't give a damn about them. But anybody else who stands up to protest against oppression. If they of color, they go get the head whipping. If they white, it seems they going to get a go-along. And then eventually the daddy got to come to try and show face and punish some. But, hey, it would have been a whole different ball game if we was a bunch of niggas going there 2 weeks ago instead of a bunch of devils, crackers, yorugals, peckerwoods, whatever else you want to call them, and talking about you got this one peckerwood talking about he's a shaman or a sermon
right.
or some old nonsense in the basket, got to eat organic food. I let that mofo go hungry. F him.
All right, Jake. We got some other callers, but you hang in there with me. Okay.
Put me on mute.
You bet. 334-334, good afternoon. 334.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brother Lusk. How are you doing this day, man?
Oh, man, I'm sorry to tune in late, but I wanted to make sure I tuned in anyway.
I appreciate that.
And spend some time with you and live and learn and keep going with the process of pushing forward.
That's right.
And thank you so very much for your platform, as always. Wow, brother. Oh, man, this brother prior to me has really put some things into perspective that we never really put too much emphasis on.
Right.
And I guess maybe because of the fact that, Brother Oshie, there's this thing called acceptance and approval. And in this process of acceptance and approval, I think there is a lot of looking over the shoulder of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
To see who's listening.
Right.
And so will we ever get to a point where we can retaliate one for the other, the eye for the eye, mm-hmm. Tooth for the tooth kind of process? So, and especially now in this day and age where things have modified itself so much so, what can one do? That was one thing that I've always kind of wondered recently is, how do we fight?
Mm-hmm.
How do we fight with the history that we've acquired? How do we be able to become victorious? All right, should we just simply satisfy ourselves with the replacement of Confederate statues with our own kind and type of ideological statues?
No. Let's see.
Or laws given the names, and no disrespect to the brother in Columbus, Ohio, names to laws if something like this should happen. Should we just be satisfied and just go on our merry little way? There's more questions that would accumulate in and of itself, but it's a process of working towards a solution.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, Brother Lusk, I look at the solution is not here for us. It is a constant struggle, a constant battle of us challenging authority of this country and the rulers of this country to respect our humanity. As I always say, it hasn't happened, it's not happening, and it ain't gonna happen. It is futile. It is futile. And so what we must do as African people, teach ourselves, learn our history, and prepare ourselves to return home. For those who don't want to go back, stay here, make the connection here with ourselves, over there, just like European Jews, the European Jews, wherever they are, they're going to support Israel.
Yes.
They're going to put all kinds of money into support of Israel. As criminal as Israel is, and they are, they're going to put money into that. And the United States government puts millions and hundreds of millions of dollars into Israel. Us, they don't give a damn. Ain't gave a but they put money into Israel.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
See, so I'm looking at it as the education that we need to start at an early age that is going to prepare us to get up and out of this madness, this insanity. And us begging and pleading to a people that we have seen historically can give less than a rat's ass about us. And don't care anything about what we think, anything about who we are and what we have done, you know, will not even contemplate about reparations. Now, I believe in reparations because reparations are owed, they are due because of the suffering of our people. And not to challenge these Caucasians about reparations does a dishonor and disservice to our ancestors who sacrificed much and who died, you know.
Uh-huh.
But there's things that we must do to make ourselves strong, to make the case for reparations a reality. You know, because just like I've said on this program many times, there was this Caucasian named Charles Kuttheimer, who was a columnist, a journalist, and he talked about giving us reparations. And this was like about 30-some years ago. I read this when I was sitting at the firehouse, you know.
Okay.
And he said, you know, we've given them affirmative action. We've given them welfare. We've given them all of these things. Give them reparations. Because the mindset that they have, we'll give them this money and we'll get it right back within months.
Wow.
Because they won't come together, put that money together to build institutions. They'll get that money. Let's just say it's 40,000 at that time, 40,000 a family and 20,000 the individual. They'll buy a car. They'll buy some clothes. You know, they'll party. You know, they won't make that money work for them in their communities. And then once we give them reparations, shut the hell up. We don't give you everything. You shut the hell up. And there is no class action. If you have a problem, it's on you to prove it. And if you don't have anything or anybody to corroborate what you're saying, your case is closed and you'll suffer. Yeah, give them reparations. We'll get that money right back. In fact, the reparations will be just like what's happening right now, a stimulus. Because of what's going on with the pandemic. Uh-huh. That's what the reparations will be. It'll be like a stimulus program. We're going to give you some money, and you're going to go out there and stimulate the economy by buying clothes and cars and jewelry and all this other stuff. You're not going to put that money into a collective bank or anything to build an institution, to build schools, to build training for vocational training. And so you're not going to do it. And so, therefore, we are, if we continue to follow in what's happening here, we are locked in their situation. This is theirs, not ours. We're locked in their situation. The only thing that can get us up out of that is the courage to purge ourselves and to purge ourselves of that ignorance and break the monopoly that they have on our minds, to release that vice grip they have on our minds. It's the only way.
Brother Oshie, could you share that with me? Via email?
Sure. Of course, brother.
Would you? Yeah. I'd like to read that to myself, sir.
All right, dear brother. Brother Lutz, thank you.
Thank you so very much.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Always, always.
All right. Peace. Caller 470-470-798. Caller 470-798. Okay, they just want to listen. That's cool. All right. If a race has no history, if it has no worthwhile traditions, it becomes a negligible factor in the thought of the world and it stands in danger of being exterminated. That's one of my favorite quotes by Carter G. Woodson. I used to write that in this daily book that I had when I was on the fire department to keep track of the schools I would go to and anything else. I always put that at the first page for years. If a race has no history, if it has no worthwhile traditions, it becomes a negligible factor in the thought of the world, and it stands in danger of being exterminated. That's why history is so important. Truth must be dug up from the past and presented to the circle of scholastics in the scientific form and then through stories and dramatizations that will permeate our educational system. Bring that up. Bring up the truth. If you control a man's thinking, you do not have to worry about his actions. When you determine that a man shall think, you do not have to concern yourself about what he will do. If you make a man feel that he is inferior, you don't have to compel him to accept an inferior status, for he will seek it himself. If you make a man think that he is justly an outcast, you do not have to order him to the back door. He will go without being told. And if there is no back door, his very nature will demand one. One of the deeper quotes by Dr. Carter G. Woodson. If you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his actions. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and particularly on this station of Time for an Awakening, we deal with dealing with the African mind, trying to put something on our mind, trying to eradicate that ignorance, that doubt, that stupidity, trying to make us understand the importance of embracing our culture, embracing our history. That's why it's so important this month, brothers and sisters. That's why this month is so important. Yes, I know that our history is more than just one month, but this is a chance to, it just as Carter G. Woodson thought, at least we can focus, try to develop programs, try to encourage, try to contest, anything that we can do. It's important. If you control a man's thinking, you do not have to worry about his actions. When you determine what a man shall think, you do not have to concern yourself about what he will do. He is anticipated. You know what he'll do. You know, I caught this piece about our struggle in our captivity. When we, you know, I always say that America perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. Individualism within our captivity was deep because you thought of yourself as an individual and you can survive. I'll survive this. So when they took your wife away and raped her, you said, I'll get over it. I'll survive. When they took your children away and sold them, you said, I'll get over this and I'll survive. I'm an individual. When they took your labor, all the things that you did, all the cotton you picked, all the tobacco, sugar cane, I'm an individual. I'll get over it and I'll survive. This willingness to just say, I'll survive. That mentality is still there today. It is still with us today. The same educational process which inspires and stimulates the oppressor with the thought that he is everything and has accomplished everything worthwhile depresses and crushes at the same time the spark of the genius within us by making us feel that his race does not amount to much and will never measure up to the standards of other people. Because we're making us once again feel that we have never done nothing and they've done it all. They lying ass. There was two times in the history of the world where they came and sat at our feet. In ancient Kemet, the Greeks later come back as conquerors. And then again, when we went into the western part of Europe, when Europe was in a dark age, medieval age, for over 700 years, until they had their, quote, awakening and kicked us out. Man. The present system under the control of Caucasians train Negroes to be white and at the same time convinces him of the improbability and impossibility of his becoming white. The Negroes will have no outlet but to go down a blind alley. If the sort of education which is now receiving is to enable them to find the way out of their present difficulties, they will never do it. It's not designed to. The only education that is sufficient for us as African people is knowledge of self, self-education, the history and accomplishments of our people taught by us, for us. We need not a history of selected races or nations, but the history of the world void of bias and hate and religious prejudice. The bondage of the Negro brought captive from Africa is one of the greatest dramas in history. And the writer who merely sees it as their ordeal, something to approve or condemn, fails to understand the evolution of the human race. The Negroes are facing an alternative of rising in the sphere of production to supply the proportions of the manufacturers and merchants, or they're going to go down to the graves of paupers. And that's what we're going to do. We need to. I've shown you that piece where it says that Africans must be kept poor. We must not be able to manufacture anything, produce nothing. We'll keep them poor, because if we don't keep Africans poor, the advanced nations will suffer. I don't give a damn about nobody. Chinese, Arabs, Koreans, sure the hell don't care about Caucasians, and especially the British and the French for what they have done. I'm just hoping and praying that we can start to do this soon to gain control of the resources we have. Let us be diamond merchants. The diamonds come from Africa. I don't know if you knew this, but the greatest import in Israel is diamonds. The greatest export in Israel is diamonds. They control the diamond industry. Go to New York. Where do diamonds come from, though? South Africa or Africa. How do they get it? They take it. Man. If Negroes are to remain forever removed from the producing atmosphere and the persistent discrimination continues, there will be nothing left for them to do. And you're right. They don't need us no more. That's why there's talk about, you know, eliminating us. To talk about killing the population of Africa. Played that the other day. Caucasian talking about, yeah, let's... Oh, brothers and sisters, this is sad. Sad. This assumption of Negro leadership in the ghetto, then, must not be confined to matters of religion, education, or social uplift. It must deal with such fundamental forces in life as to make them, to make these things possible. Our aim is to appeal to reason. Prayer is not one of our remedies. It depends on what one is praying for. We consider prayer nothing more than a fervent wish. Consequently, the merit and worth of a prayer depends upon what the fervent wish is. You're right. The crusade is much more important than the anti-lynching movement, because there would be no lynching if they did not start in the classroom. There would be no lynching if the educational process was honest and just. But of course, it never has been. Because number one, the Caucasian does not want to share. He does not want to be in competition with anybody. And that's why that piece that this cat named Howard Nicholas, I think it was, you know, we must keep Africa poor. We must not let them come together and produce for themselves. We must not let them to control the mineral wealth even that they have. Because he said that mineral wealth alone will not take you out of poverty. But mineral wealth along with production, finished products of what you have, learn how to make from the minerals that you have. Learn how to develop railroads, ports, to move your goods from not just from within the continent, but from outside of it. Oh, man, time is up, y'all. Make sure you go to the science fair if you can, if you have time. Go to Zoom from 1 to 4. Go to Zoom. Put in the code 807-211-2759. That's 807-211-2759. And the passcode is Pearl, P-E-A-R-L. P-E-A-R-L. I definitely pushed that because I just love to see our children do good things, do great things, using their mind and articulating. I love it. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they shown the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day and a great weekend. Hope to see you on Monday. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bifo Hodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. God bless all of you. Peace, family.